Pavan Dhingra is a professor of American Studies at Amherst College. In his new book, Hyper Education, he uncovers the intense world of high achievement education and its effects on children, parents, educators, and communities. While caricatures of families who embrace hyper education are easy to find, think the Asian tiger mom, Professor Dhingra both answers and dispels the myths about why Asian American, white, and other kids excel at education, why parents believe in hyper-education, and whether all of this extra education is really worth it. Again, the name of the book is Hyper-Education, Why Good Schools, Good Grades, and Good Behavior Are Not Enough. Pavan Dhingra is a sociologist and professor of American Studies at Amherst College, and it's a pleasure to welcome him to the program this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
We'll begin with a definitional question, which is, what is hyper-education?
It's the pursuit of more and more education for our young children. Let's think middle school, elementary school, even pre-elementary. When these children are already in fine schools, they're well-resourced, they're well-ranked schools, people move to these neighborhoods for the schools, and they're doing just fine in school. So there's really no external reason or concern for those kids' academic progress, and yet parents want them in more education outside of school, worried that they need to be more competitive in what they're learning, worried about their future chances for high school and college. And we're seeing this educational pursuit take place, let's say, in after-school learning centers. And so, for instance, Kumon or Mathnasium they're some of the fastest-growing franchises in the country of any kind. And that's a space where parents may put their kids in. They're doing online learning, or they're also investing time and money in preparing for academic competitions, whether math competitions, spelling bees, geography bees, what have you. So that's what we mean by hyper education.
So when it comes to where we are right now and where education is right now, and the fact that all of us basically around the globe are on hold and in a pause, is this good or bad for hyper education?
Well, it's definitely going to increase it. So right now, we're all kind of, as you said, in a pause. Parents are helping their children with remote learning, and parents are concerned, right? They're not seeing their children be in classrooms very many hours a day. They're getting assignments that are due for the full week, but the kids finish them by Wednesday. And so parents are purchasing more and more, for instance, education books online. And they're also realizing that maybe we can turn to these tutoring centers, which are offering many online virtual opportunities as a way to supplement what's going on. And it makes sense for parents to think of these education centers as partners in their kids' education, because for many years, these tutoring centers have been receiving federal money to tutor families. For instance, No Child Left Behind gave billions of dollars in tutoring, which helped buttress these companies up. The Mathnasium partners with the national PTA and has math nights inside schools. And all that is a way, again, to help validate these spaces as assistance in your kids' learning. And they do have, you know, oftentimes a good track record. So as parents right now may be worried that their kids aren't getting as much education as they otherwise would be, turning to these other options makes a lot of sense for those who can afford it. And so what we're going to see then, right, is a growing divide between those who can afford these opportunities and those who do not, and a growing education arms race taking place, even at this young age, where parents feel we have to get more and more advanced in our kids' education in order to keep up with others, and maybe even to, you know, excel over others.
The book basically comes from a series of interviews that you did, 100 really in-depth interviews with teachers and tutors and principals and parents and kids. And you look at how they are dealing with this. Give us a sense of what you learn from that group and the commonalities that you find in talking to all of these various participants of this equation.
Mm-hmm. People are worried, right? But they're worried about different things. The parents I spoke to, whether they're, you know, U.S.-born white parents, whether they're immigrant parents, are worried that their kids are not going to be ready for what's ahead of them unless they have their children do something academic outside of school. And this is a real shift, right? So we often think of extracurricular activities as, you know, sports related and arts and civic and religious, and all of those obviously are growing and they're important. But more and more parents are saying, unless we do something academic for our kids also, unless we prioritize that at least in some ways, our kids are going to be left behind. And what's really striking to me is that parents weren't just concerned about the kids being left behind academically. Many parents would say, doing this extra math class after school, it makes my kids not just smarter, but also makes them more moral. I have better kids if I do this. So one mother I spoke to, for instance, said, my grandmother survived the Holocaust. My parents put me through college by their hard work. And that's why I have my child in an after-school math center. I want my child to learn the values of hard work, of perseverance, of taking care of oneself. And so what we're saying is that even though parents obviously want what's best for their kids and they're worried about their academic outcomes to some degree, what's driving this is even beyond that, right? It's about making them the right kind of person. And that was really surprising to me. But on the other hand, as parents think this is helping their kids become the right kind of person, teachers and principals and other educators are worried about the stress and the anxiety that they're seeing manifested in schools at a younger and younger age, because parents seem to be, in the teacher's mind, too focused on educational outcomes. I spoke to a principal who said, you know, I just don't believe that kids, you know, a fourth grader wants to go home and do more long division. I just don't believe it. And parents who do this to their kids are not sufficiently caring or sufficiently grounded. So you're seeing very different points of view on the same activity. And that was really startling. I'm hoping people can appreciate the other side of the coin, right, that is at stake here.
So what you just said is fascinating. And just a fourth grader. So we're seeing this at the beginning in elementary school, maybe even before mm-hmm. that, of really, really young kids it seems like it's the proper term, a pressure put on them.
And that's right. And I want to stress that this is not something that you're just seeing, for instance, in like the Upper East Side of Manhattan or among a certain demographic of parent. This is a growing trend that we're seeing across metropolitan and suburban and exurban areas. Like I said, some of these tutoring centers are some of the fastest growing franchises in the country, which means that there are lots of people coming to them looking for ways to supplement what they're getting in school. You don't need to be a quote unquote tiger parent to be invested in this. You don't need to be trying to get your kid into a top tier college or high school or something like that. It's a common trend, and it's one of the reasons why I wanted to study it, because it's increasingly becoming the new normal, right? And why else it matters is, even if your child is not in one of these things, it can still impact you, right? So just take, for instance, if there's kids in your classroom who are doing this, then all of a sudden, they're likely going to be a bit more advanced because they're learning material outside of school. And now you may feel pressured to do the same thing in order to keep up with them, in order to make sure you're not left behind. And so school districts as a whole are actually having lots of intense conversations around how much is too much, right? And you're seeing, for instance, school districts say, we need to cut down on homework, or we need to install, you know, breathing exercises and all these practices to handle the stress and anxiety that's going on. And these are parents that I studied and looked at and talked to, who are saying, listen, you know, this stress matters, anxiety can matter, but we still need to be doing this. Otherwise, our kids will be behind. So what's motivating these parents? Why are they doing this? That's what I was trying to uncover.
The name of the book is Hyper Education: Why Good Schools, Good Grades, and Good Behavior Are Not Enough. Pavan Nigra is our guest this morning. You write in the book a lot about the Scripps National Spelling Bee, and it's fascinating, and I would like to talk about it a little bit, because you bring us behind the scenes of this spelling bee, as well as other competitions, and this is an example of things where the good school, as the subtitle suggests, that the good schools, the good grades, the good behavior, in this case, oh, by the way, that's not enough. You also have to win this competition.
Right. The families I spoke to, in fact, I got interested in this topic because I was talking with families who were doing the spelling bee or other competitions. And when I was talking with them, I realized they don't really care about the spelling bee to some degree, but that's not really what's motivating them. What really motivated them was the want for their kids to be doing something more academic outside of school. So whether it's spelling, whether it's math, whether it's, you know, geography, history, what have you, in science, right? That mattered. The topic mattered less than the fact that the kids were doing something academic outside of school, because how else can I make sure that I'm preparing my kids for what lies ahead and making them competitive and ensuring, in the parents' mind, right, the right kind of outcomes? So parents will, you know, not just help their kids study, although it takes, they do a lot of that. They'll purchase, you know, a lot of materials for spelling. They'll hire coaches. And so there are actually spelling bee coaches that exist. It's a line of work you could have. And to make their kids better prepared for the competitions. And there are multiple competitions that take place besides Scripps Spelling Bee. And right now, right, with the Spelling Bee being canceled this year, you know, a lot of parents, a lot of families are quite distraught about this. In my own mind, right, you know, parents and kids, you know, just because the competition is canceled, don't just give up on what you were studying, right? Think about it, but go about it in a more fun, enjoyable way. But that is a concern a lot of parents are having right now with these things being canceled.
So you touched on this, and I know it's apt in this particular part of the conversation, but let's talk about the immigrant experience and how that plays into this, especially with spelling bees, but also mm-hmm. with the overall nature of hypereducation.
Right. So that's a great question. In the spelling bee instance, I'm not sure if listeners are aware, but the Scripps National Spelling Bee has been dominated, is the right word to use, by Indian immigrants and the kids of Indian immigrants for the past 20 years. In fact, last year, there were it wasn't just one champion, there were eight co-champions. The Scripps couldn't narrow it down past eight, seven of whom were Indian origin. And so I've talked to families like this who are pursuing this, and other families who, immigrants who are invested in this hypereducation. And a lot of them say similar things, which is, we grew up, studying a lot, and that school was by no means enough education for us. And so, and we made it to the U.S., and we have, you know, professional jobs because of our family's investment in education. So if that's your mindset, right, if you got ahead through education and you believe in the value of education, of course, we're all told about the value of education, then to not invest in your kids' education once you're here in this country doesn't make any sense, right? In fact, you're doing your kids harm by by not investing more in what the kids can be learning, whether that be through an academic competition or through a learning center or something online. And so you're seeing this trend. It's being done a lot by these kind of immigrant parents, quote-unquote tiger parents, right, but by others as well who are feeling the same way. And one of the goals of the book, right, is to kind of peel behind this tiger parent caricature and understand what's really motivating these people, right? Let's treat them as real people, as, you know, caring individuals. And what's their story? Why do they do things that other families look at and say, that's too extreme, that's too much, I wouldn't want that for my kid, right? Because it's important to do that because, again, this is a growing trend nationally, not just among these parents. And it's impacting all kinds of families, whether or not your child is involved or not.
A growing trend, you say, and you look at just the natural trajectory. A kid goes to grade school, they go to high school, they graduate, they'll go to college, maybe have postgraduate work. And my question is the jury still out on what this does to the kids, of what we know the mm-hmm. result is of how these kids turn out?
Yes and no. In some ways, the jury is in, right? And that a lot of the children, let's just take those who have done well in the spelling bee, for instance, they go on and they are, you know, from years past, one way of measuring them is that they've done well. They've gone to, you know, good colleges, and they have professional jobs, and they seem well balanced and normal, and all the things that you're looking for. And so, in that sense, right, the jury's in. They've done well, and that's been a very fine path for them. Although I spoke to one past Scripps Spelling Bee champion, who's fine and very caring person, but says, I regret how much time I spent on that. Right, like I was so narrowly focused on this one thing that I missed out on certain kinds of experiences and activities, and I'm not sure it was worth it. Now, again, he's not saying I made a big mistake. I shouldn't have done this. He's not walking around with, significant issues that he has to manage. But like anyone who spent a lot of time on something and sacrifices things to do that, you might wonder, was this worth it all or not, right? And parents are also recognizing there could be other consequences, negative consequences, that we have to be mindful of. So like I mentioned before, teachers are seeing stress and anxiety on the increase, and they are saying this parental push on education is part of the problem. And that's something the book really talks in depth about. But you're also seeing parents say, yes, I'm making my kid, smarter and in some ways getting some good moral training and discipline, but are we nurturing our kids' creativity sufficiently? Are we nurturing their compassion sufficiently? Or are we just making them more competitive, right? And that's a concern. I think we can look at our current moment right now and say, we benefit from us and our neighbors and our communities being compassionate, right? And looking out for one another. How much are we teaching that actively, whether in the school or through the activities we put our kids in after school? That's a real question, because so much of the activities we do for our kids, whether they're athletic or they're artistic or something else, are about making them better at something, better than someone else at something. And I think parents I spoke to are very conscious of this and concerned about, what they're giving their kids, even as they're trying to help them for their future.
Paman Nigra is our guest. The name of the book is Hyper Education. How much does this fit into our overall attitude of the scheduling of our kids and even ourselves, really?
Mm-hmm.
The sports, the camps, all of the other stuff that is part of growing up now. I say this only as a frame of reference. I'm 52 years old. When I was growing up, we didn't have this stuff.
Right.
And just none of this existed. There was an amount of, sure, you did your homework, and then you would go out and play. There weren't all of these other options that are now. I don't know if that's good. I don't know if that's bad. I just know that it's different. So I ask you the question of how this fits into all of the other stuff that is offered to not only parents, but to their children.
Well, that's an excellent observation of generational change. And I think a lot of parents who are having their kids in, activities today say that this wasn't available. This wasn't something that I did, but they still feel compelled to put their kids in multiple activities a week. All right. So, you're not, some kids are in more than one sport at a time. And these things are increasing their hours and expectations and such and such. And so there's a real concern of overscheduling kids. And, parents are too involved sometimes in their kids' lives. Parents today are spending more money on their kids than at any other time in history. Right. And part of that is because we're having fewer kids than otherwise, but also it's because of this sense of, if I don't do this, if I don't take advantage of the opportunities that are around me, then somehow I'm failing my kids. And what we're seeing is that parents are creating a bit too much of anxiety or overscheduling, lack of playtime, lack of free time. And that's not good for the kids' development. It's not good for the kids' self-esteem. It's not good for the parents who are spending more money, more time. It's more exhausting. And part of this growth is not just in terms of athletics or civic or artistic ventures, but increasingly academic opportunities after school are taking up parents' time. And that's one more thing they have to account for and feel compelled to do. And so the consequences can be quite extreme if you don't effectively balance it out with enough playtime and free time, which parents struggle with nowadays. It's kind of like a middle class problem, if you will, because those are the ones who can afford to put their kids in these activities end up with the kind of overscheduling more.
There seems to be some anecdotal evidence of what we're going through now, of just these months of March and April and into May, where, as we noted earlier, we've been paused. And some people are saying, again, anecdotally, of, wow, I don't really want to live the life that I used to have of running around.
Right.
It's kind of nice to be home with my kid, and maybe the kids have a different opinion, but it's nice to be home and not to be running in 50 different places, and to say, okay, this is what we're finding out, a little tap on the shoulder of what's important.
I as a parent, I can appreciate that as well. It's nice to be able to have every meal with my family, and to not have to be driving them around in different places. Even though we weren't very scheduled, it's still a respite from that. But I don't think it's going to last. Let's assume we get back to our understanding of normal in terms of activity of post pandemic, because parents who are invested in these activities do so for a couple of reasons. One is their kids like it. Their kids enjoy the activity they're in, whether that be playing softball or studying for an academic competition or taking some extra math. Like, children actually enjoy doing these things. But at the same time, parents have their kids in some of these activities, even if the kids aren't that motivated by it, because the parents are worried that if they don't do it, they're not setting their kids up to be competitive enough for college admissions, let's say. Once we get back to our understanding of normal, that fear of competition is not going to go away, and it's still going to motivate families to do more activities, whether academic or otherwise, than they're currently doing, and which they're kind of enjoying a break from. It's because we enjoy having a break from these things, and we're kind of realizing we don't have to be doing these things. Doesn't mean we're going to stop once we get back to our normal opportunities, because parents are driven not just by what's fun, what's relaxing, what's enjoyable, but also driven by what do I think I need to do in order to set my kid up for success. And that's going to creep back in and create more of this overscheduling that we're enjoying not having right now.
So in the conclusion of the book, you write about what needs to change. My reading of it is we need a little more of some things and a little less of others.
Right. That's exactly right. I mean, we need, first and foremost, to listen to the children, right? What are they saying to us about how they're experiencing these activities, how they're experiencing being overscheduled? And it's not a simple, answer, the kids hate it or the kids love it, right? It's more nuanced than that, and the book explains that. But we have to listen to the kids, and we have to and a couple other things. Parents who do this for their kids, who put their kids into more academics, again, they're not extreme. They're just, maybe an after-school math class or this or that. That we should not demonize them or caricature them a certain kind of way. They're trying to care for their kids. They want what's best for them. So if we want this to change, if we want there to be, going back to your earlier point, a more relaxed way of doing things after school, then we should listen to these parents and talk to them in ways that recognize their concerns. Otherwise, you're never going to have a real conversation. You're never going to make change, right? And the social impact of this pursuit is increasing educational inequality between those who can afford these opportunities and those who can't. Let's say we had a magic wand and we were able to have all the schools be equally funded and equally excellent and train kids just as well, no matter their zip code. You would still find educational inequality because some families are able to take advantage of these after-school programs to educate their kids, and others won't be able to. And so part of why this is important to recognize is that if you care about educational equality, this is a key part of that, even though, and especially because, it takes place outside of the school.
The name of the book is Hyper Education: Why Good Schools, Good Grades, and Good Behavior Are Not Enough. It is published by New York University Press. Bob Ndingarai, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for sharing this important subject. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Again, the name of the book is Hypereducation. The book is published by NYU. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.